From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan. It's Thursday, April 17th, 2025. I'm your host, Boston Christopher Gunnath Cheesh. Hawa Tuksuk Nusum, Salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. You can also join us behind the scenes in the studio on YouTube at kto.org/JPMLive or on KTO's Facebook and Instagram pages. Today, Conbrio Chamber Series and Orpheus Project combine their Wonder Twin powers to present Tangle of Rainbows this Friday and Saturday. Spring is here, and it's time for the Juno Community Cleanup this Saturday, April 19th. We talk with a couple of board members of Litter Free about how you can get involved in this annual event. And then we'll continue the conversation and talk conservation and the importance of this cleanup with Southeast Alaska Land Trust. And Chancellor Dr. Aparna Palmer stops in to talk about upcoming graduation festivities and more at the University of Alaska Southeast. Those conversations coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. Listening to Community Supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at KTOO.org. You can also join us on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. See us behind the scenes here in the studio. You can even leave a comment or a question. All the good stuff. Say hi. We're happy to communicate with you. That was a little bit of Olivier Messiaen. And this Friday and Saturday, two of Juno's music groups bring their music making magic together for a concert called Tangle of Rainbows. It's this Friday, April 18th at UAS Egan Library, and then downtown on Saturday, April 19th for a matinee at the Alaska State Museum. And Gunnath Cheesh, Hadye Adi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have a full studio of musicians in the house. I am joined by Sally Schlichting from Conbrio Chamber Series. Wasiati, Gunnath Cheesh, how are you?
Gunnath Cheesh, good to see you.
Yeah, and I have W. Todd Hunt, otherwise known as Todd, from the Orpheus Project. Gunnath Cheesh, Wasiati, how's it going?
Good, thanks.
And I have Alina Levi, who is a violinist and playing in this wonderful music event this weekend. Wasiati, Alina, how are you?
Or
Lena. People call you Lena, right?
Either way.
Either way is good. Not late for dinner, right? As they say, as the old dad joke is. Okay, so Todd, what were we listening to there? Is Olivier Messiaen? Mm-hmm. He's a composer, obviously, yes. By the pronunciation, I'm assuming French.
French, very good.
Okay.
Yes. So he's a French composer from the early to mid 20th century. So that was the fourth movement of the big piece on the program for this weekend,
okay.
Quartet for the End of Time.
Oh.
Very ominous sounding title, I know, but for good reason.
Okay.
That was the little intermezzo movement, the sort of little nice break from some of the other heaviness that happens around it.
And you're from Orpheus Project.
Mm-hmm.
And Sally, you're from Combrio Chamber Series. Mm-hmm. Now, you all have collaborated before, but why now are we doing it as a co-production? Where did this idea come from to say, hey, it's both of us doing it this time, as opposed to one and then Todd just in there as the conductor or whatever?
Okay. Well, so years ago, I think Sally and I started like just talking about this piece, actually, the Quartet for the End of Time, and how fun it would be to put on. And it's like sort of imagining places we could do it. And we were talking about stuff like you know, at midnight or something, you know, on
over
a first
cocktails.
Friday. Right.
You know,
yeah,
over
maybe
cocktails.
A couple too many
yeah.
cocktails. Yeah. but yeah. So it was just sort of a fun thing. But our pianist that we have, Jamila Halashwe, we have like actually been talking about doing it for about 10 years now. And finally, we got a couple other folks for the quartet that were crazy enough to say yes. So yeah. We got
conscripted.
Yeah, they were conscripted into doing it. I think very willingly. Anyway, so back to your actual question, the collaboration I think just came out of that sort of thing, and we worked together numerous times.
Yeah, just wanting to be able to pull off this piece and have it performed in Juno. This is a world premiere in Juno.
Oh, yeah. And,
so,
you know, with the Conbrio's connection with people who are very into chamber music and our audience, which is very into different kind of musical offerings, it seemed like a good way to bring the two together.
Do you find, Sally, that the audiences for the two groups is a little different?
They might be. I think we'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we both have you know, reached out to our audiences on this program. So.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of overlap, of course, because, you know, people who like music tend to like a lot of different kinds
of
music.
That's what I was wondering, just in terms of that. And Sally, what is the Quartet for the End of Time? Todd mentioned it's kind of ominous. What does it mean for you? Why is the piece titled that?
Oh, gosh. I'm not going to speak to why the piece is titled to that. This is Todd's work. He's playing in it. I don't play in it. But it speaks to me in that it's such an epic piece. And the composer, was in prison, in a prisoner of war camp, when he wrote the piece.
Okay.
And which is just an amazing feat. Mm-hmm. And there were other prisoners who played instruments, and it was this complement of instruments that was available: piano, clarinet, violin, and cello. So I, you know, it's just really kind of stunning, you know.
And you think about the time; it was 1940, and so they were talking World War II. It was a Nazi prisoner of war camp, and if you can just kind of imagine, like, the rise of fascism, and like things were going very badly for the world. And
was he able to write it down, or did he?
Oh, right. So yeah, there was a one of the guards.
Okay.
There helped him actually get manuscript paper and found instruments and all that kind of thing. So it was, thanks to at least one.
Do you want to say something about why it's called the Quartet for the End of Time, since there's a lot of religious?
Yeah, I mean, so he took a lot of the inspiration for the piece from the Book of Revelation. Messiaen was a devout Catholic, and we've got the movement titles like Liturgy of Crystal and a vocalese for the angel who announces the end of time, and lots of this very vivid kind of imagery. But he was also really into birds, which is, that's okay. But there's a lot of bird song, and it ties into also one of the other pieces on the program, which Sally might want to.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because now this is all of Messiaen on this program, right?
We'll get there.
So
Todd comes to me, he was like, I really want to do this piece, this Quartet for the End of the Time. It's not quite long enough for a full program. And I go off and I'm like, I have this piece by Messiaen called The Blackbird, the Le Mer Noir. And so I thought, maybe there's a way I can get in on this program. So I'm kind of crashing his party, and I open the program with a short piece with Kyle Farley Robinson on piano, just really stunning piece
called
The Blackbird. And it samples actual bird calls from from the blackbird. So he was really a dedicated ornithologist, Messiaen was. He was quite dedicated.
And so that's a nice tie-in, too, with this piece, with the quartet, which has a lot of the of bird sounds in it as well. But also, there's one more piece on the program that comes right before the quartet. And, Alina, I'm
is that Lena's piece?
Yeah.
Okay, tell us about it. Did you write it?
I did.
Oh, awesome.
It just so happened I was actually commissioned back in 2020, thankfully before the pandemic, back at Boston University while I was in school to write a solo violin work for another Messiaen tribute concert.
Oh.
Yeah.
So is your piece written sort of in the style of Messiaen then? Did you take inspiration from him?
I actually quote a piece of his directly. It was a song cycle he had written for his first wife, Claire Delbos, who had been a very famous violinist. And not to get too dark into how it happened, but she suffered from amnesia after a certain point in her life. So kind of exploring themes of like memory loss, recurring figures in that way, and a lot of kind of that same like timelessness that Messiaen plays with in his own work.
Wow. Okay. So what's the order? What's the order of the night?
So it's the Sally's piece, the Blackbird is first, and then Lena's piece, and then the quartet finishes.
Okay.
It
and how long is your piece, Lena?
It's Yeah. Thank you, Todd. 6.5 minutes.
I timed it the other day.
Awesome. Because you have to know how long the program is.
Yeah. Timeless.
Now, I want to, Sally, will you also shout out the other musicians we haven't mentioned yet that are part of this? I think you've got most of them in there.
Well, so we have, Kyle Farley Robinson on piano with me. And then for the quartet, there's Todd on clarinet, Lena on violin, and Ben Holtz on cello, and then Jamila Huashe
on piano. Okay.
Yeah. Who's visiting us from Fairbanks.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. That's excellent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And so these performances, you're traveling a little bit. You're going out to Ogg Bay. You're going to go out to UAS for Friday night, and that's at 7:30.
Yes.
And then Saturday, there's only two shows, right? Yeah. And then Saturday on the 19th, it's something that Conbrio's been doing recently, which is these afternoon concerts at the Alaska State Museum.
Yeah, for years now, actually.
Are you doing it in the foyer?
Yes, where it's in the foyer.
It's that beautiful sound in there, right?
Oh, yeah.
It like makes a wonderful music. And does the library? I haven't heard music in the library before, but I'm imagining that space is also amazing.
Yeah, it actually works really well, and they have a very nice piano there. Jazz and Classics does
quite
a few concerts in there as well. Yeah. And it's nice, open, live for for a library. It's got surprisingly good acoustics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. And I saw in your notes that you sent me that you can basically find information at both of your websites. Mm-hmm. So I want to shout out both of those.
Facebook
is where you find Conbrio. Yeah. Yeah. Just search Conbrio, Conbrio, Chamber Music, and you'll find their Facebook page. And then orpheusproject.org.
Right.
And are there tickets for this event?
No, it's pay as you can.
Pay as you can at the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's an amazing gift to the community. Look at you all doing that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Well, the community is you know, they appreciate it. They really do appreciate it.
That's really cool. And just what's up next for both organizations? What's up next for Conbrio?
Well, this is my last show of the year.
Of the spring
of the season.
Of the season, okay.
But I do have three programs next year. The four of us are going to get together in the Icefield Quartet.
Oh, nice!
And
yes,
we're going to do a concert. So
excellent!
Really excited about that. And Sarah Radke Brown, soprano, and Candice Livolsi on harp will do a recital.
Okay.
And then I'm splitting a recital with my good friend Karen Pallenberg on clarinet. So we'll have a flute, clarinet, piano.
Awesome season coming up. That's starting next fall, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And what about you, Todd? Is there anything in the spring?
So for Orpheus, this is the last big thing of the year. But over the summer, we always do a saxophone camp, basically, where we come and play. Like it's basically, you know, anybody who can can make it to come play saxophone ensemble music and duets and quartets and whatever, just try to keep people playing over the summer.
Over the summer, yeah.
And next year is starting to come into focus, but we're going to have probably a couple of dance shows in Orpheus with our new sort of dance collective that Haley Duran is putting together for us.
Yeah.
So along with a big show as well that we're working on what that actually is right now. It's probably something that we're going to build from the ground up rather than doing something that is written,
yeah.
You know, like an opera or something.
Awesome. Well, in the meantime, you're going to go see Tangles of Rainbows. Tangle of Rainbows. Not Tangles.
It's just tangle, one big old tangle.
One Tangle of Rainbows. And it's going to be chamber works of Olivier Messiaen and also a piece by Alina Levi, which is really cool. And you can see that on Friday night out at the UAS Egan Library at 7:30 p.m. or Saturday downtown at the Alaska State Museum at 2 p.m. And, of course, you can go to orpheusproject.org or find Conbrio Chamber Music on Facebook for more information. And there is no charge.
That's right.
Pay as you can at the door. Mm-hmm. Well, Gunnath Cheesh for coming in today and sharing us about this cool, collaboration. I love to see groups collaborating together, and this sounds fantastic.
Yes.
So break a leg and do all the things that you do in music. I really appreciate you being here. I'm always wondering, like, what is it? But play good. Good.
No, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Cheese for
Thank
being
you.
Here.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Up next, we will talk with Litter Free about the Juneau Community Cleanup. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. But first, we're going to harken back to last week and listen to a literal of Dara Relatos live here in the studio on the red carpet stage playing for Folk Fest. This is her song, Envy.
Take all your dumb luck and bend it. Lay it on the hill to feed the crows. I'm sure soon you'll regret it. Like all those symphonies you compose. But oh, honey, I love you. Maria said she'd take you dancing if you just follow her to Rome. I never dodged so many questions from a woman with a bag of stones, but oh, honey, I love you. You write your letters in a frenzy and dedicate them to the sun. I heard the others are in envy 'cause they have never. Storm is racing down your driveway.
Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juneau with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com. This is Juneau Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us behind the scenes here in the studio on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and or Instagram pages. Thank you for being part of the conversation. The Juno Community Cleanup is coming this Saturday, April 19th. The event starts at 8 a.m. and ends at 2 p.m. It's an event organized by Litter Free, a decades-long institution in Juno, almost 40 years, I believe, helping to keep the town beautiful and free of litter and debris. I'm joined by, are you both board members? Okay, good. So it's both board members, not No, there's not only two board members. There's you are two of the board. However we want to say that. It's John Hudson and John King, the two Johns. Going to the Chiefs for being here. John Hudson, Wasiti, how are you doing?
Doing well. Thank you for having us.
Awesome. And John King, welcome. Going to the Chiefs. How are you today?
Excellent. Thanks for having us.
Awesome. So first I just want to ask, why are you both on the board?
Well, I joined the board of Litter Free. I'd been a volunteer at one of the bag sites that hands out the supplies. At Super Bear, actually, for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I found myself inviting my friends to come and join and reaching out to contacts around town that I thought could help Litter Free get bigger and spread the news. And I realized that, like, I can actually have an impact on this organization. And so I took over for the president last year, who had been president for 22 years.
Oh, wow.
And it's really big shoes to fill, but it's been really rewarding.
That's cool. And what about you, John Hudson?
Someone quit and they forced me into it. So happily here for the last 3 or 4 years.
You're one of those wonderful community members that then gets dragged into things and you say yes.
Yep.
Yeah, nice. I love that.
Haven't been drug out yet, so I'm still here.
That's good. And so so you're the president of the board right now.
Correct, yeah.
Okay. So then I'm going to have you tell us. I mentioned that Litter Free's been around for almost 40 years. I kind of think it's 38 or so, 37, 38. And the whole goal is to keep the town beautiful. What other things besides the Juno Community Cleanup happening this weekend do you all do? Okay, he's passing it to this John.
Yeah, we can jump right into
that. Do it.
So I am a board member and the coordinator of the Youth Litter Patrol program
that
Litter Free has. And it's a way for youth groups in Juno to raise funds for their programs. And it can be a public school program, a private school program, sports teams, all sorts of youth groups can come to us and we'll help fund their programs by having them go out and pick up litter.
It's that's kind of cool. I love that.
Yeah.
That's a really good – and it gets the kids involved in keeping the community clean, giving them that lesson as well as getting the work done, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you're able to support those groups. That's kind of cool. That's pretty awesome. And so this event that's happening on – Saturday. Again, I think it starts at 8 a.m. And you can also do some stuff in advance. I'm going to go ahead and put for our live stream folks the poster, which will give the bag areas. But I want to run them down, too, because this is always fun because you can actually get them before the day. Right. So
correct,
tell us,
yeah.
John, about how the day works. What is Litter Free for those who may not have been involved before? The Juno Community Cleanup.
OK. Yeah. And to add on the being able to start early. We do have two early bag sites. Picture this downtown and Friends of the Library Amazing Bookstore
mm-hmm.
in the Valley, where during regular business hours, folks can pick up bags.
As of today, right? Isn't
mm-hmm.
it today? Yeah.
Yeah. So if they want to get started, maybe they're working on Saturday or something like that, or
right.
there's a good window weather window, they can get started. But the event is, main event is on Saturday, and the bag sites are open from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. And folks can pick up trash bags, gloves from us. They can enter and do a drawing for one of two kids' bicycles. So if the kids are participating, they can enter to win a bike that's courtesy of Litter Free, The Bike Doctor, and Cycle Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
They can get some other prizes. They can sign up for our mailing list, and then they can go out and pick up litter on public land. And have all the bags put along our main pickup routes. And we have a map there at the bag sites so they can know where to drop them. Tied bags by 1:30 p.m. And then we have some amazing volunteers from some agencies that have trucks. And they'll drive around and pick them up, take them to the landfill for proper disposal.
That's amazing. Now, there's a couple points I want to get to in there that you mentioned. So one is that so the bags, you got to pick them up either early at these locations you mentioned, today or tomorrow at the Friends of the Library or Picture This downtown. And then Saturday from 8 to 10, you can pick up a bag and get the map, right, of where the locations are. But then you pointed out, and I think this is really important, public lands only, right? You're not going onto somebody's property, your neighbor who you want to say, hey, get that trash out of your yard. I'm going to do it for you on Litter Free Day. But you can't don't do that. Right?
Correct. Yeah.
That's not what you're trying to do here. You're trying to get it off the sides of the roads or parks or things like that?
Mm-hmm. Beaches, okay. Schools, all public land.
There's lots
of it around here.
Yeah, there's tons of it around. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And can you do it in groups? Like, how do you get assigned an area? How do you figure out where you're going to go if you're doing this?
No assigned areas. Folks can pick where they want to go. Maybe they've seen litter while out walking their dog or something. They can go to that area. I will be at Super Bear like I normally am. And when folks come looking for a spot, I normally have a couple in mind that I can point them to. But sometimes we do have awesome groups, like some of the Rotary groups will kind of take over a certain area and say that's where they want to clean up.
It shouldn't be hard to find this time of year.
Yeah.
A lot of people have been picking up already. You may have noticed along Egan Drive a lot of yellow trash bags piled up along the road, and those are groups that are volunteering to keep the Egan Drive area clean.
Working
and,
a little early.
Doing it in advance. They're part of these program that they have at DOT. So it's started up already, but there shouldn't be too hard to find trash, but we can lead them to the right places if they need a spot.
And how many people participate in this? How many people do you end up seeing come through?
So last year we had 800 volunteers.
What?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and together they picked up 22,140 pounds of waste.
Oh my gosh. How do you measure that? Does it get weighed as you go towards when you get to the place?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, that does bring up the landfill and waste management. They're very gracious in allowing us to dispose of the
Yeah, they're ready
there.
For you, right? Yeah. they understand.
Wonderful that. Partner. We can't
Saturday, 2 o'clock. They're gonna. Are the trucks working like full time during that morning, going around picking things up, or do they wait until 1:30 to do it?
It depends on the agency, what they want to do.
Right.
A lot of them have done it for a number of years, so they kind of know.
Yeah.
But everything has to be into the landfill by a certain time. So.
Right. Right.
That's why we have folks try to have the bags out by 1:30 at the latest.
Yeah. That's really cool. What an awesome community event.
I love that
800 people showing up. That's pretty amazing. And is there anything that happens like post the pickup? I'm sure people get together and go to lunch and stuff, but do you do anything specific or is that where people are doing it in their groups and then they go off to lunch and stuff? Like I would be tired after I picked up some trash, right?
Yeah, it is. It can be tiring. We have Alaskan Brewing Company generously donated some wristbands for free beer for folks. So maybe if they're the early ones, they can go over there to the tasting room in Lemon Creek. And then we will also have a little picnic with some pizzas and some snacks from noon to 2 in the side room there at the Alaskan Brewing Company tasting room.
So oh, nice.
Folks, the volunteers can get some snacks.
Absolutely. That's kind of cool. That's awesome. What a great event. This is all happening on Saturday, April 19th, which is Saturday. It starts at 8 a.m. You can pick up a bag early if you need to out at the amazing bookstore, as most people call it, Friends of the Library, and or downtown at Picture This. But you can also pick up your bag from 8 to 10. And there are tons of locations. Do you want to shout out a couple of the locations that people can pick up bags?
Yeah, there's the Douglas Library and Fire Hall. IGA Foodland downtown, Western Auto Marine, Fred Meyer's Main Entrance, Super Bear IGA, Duck Creek Market, and Forbidden Peak Brewery. So we kind of cover all over town, and a lot of folks often go to kind of the one closest to where they live.
Yeah, helping to pick up their part of town, which is kind of cool. John Hudson, John King, thank you so much for coming in and telling us about this event. I love talking about this one every year. It's always a great way to sort of get spring going and know that, you know, the snow is gone, although it's kind of like rainy and stuff, right, too, but it's okay. What's the weather prediction for Saturday? Do we know?
Does the radio station know?
I don't know right now.
I predict there will be some breaks in the rain.
Okay, good. Because then, you know, the trash gets a little sloppy and wet at that point. But then that's even more reason to pick it up, right? Absolutely. But I really appreciate you here, two board members from Litter Free. You can also find all information about the youth groups that John was talking about to be able to, if you want, they should contact you probably to figure out how to get involved in that.
Yeah, and if I have time to give my email, I'll do that.
Please do.
So, yeah, if you're interested in the Youth Litter Patrol, contact John at John, J-O-H-N, at SAWC.org.
SAWC.org. And that's a great thing. And then you can find out more about Litter Free over at litterfree.org. And we're going to continue the conversation with the Southeast Alaska Land Trust here in just a minute because they're helping you out. And there's also some specific conservation stuff that we're going to talk about and the importance of one of the reasons we want to pick up this trash. And so we'll do that next here on Juno Afternoon. But good cheese to John Hudson and John King for coming in today and sharing with us about the event on Saturday, Juno Community Cleanup.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sheesh. Okay, up next, we will talk to the Southeast Alaska Land Trust, but first, we're going to have a star party.
Let's have a star party. This is Steve Kosas with the Reed Drake Planetarium. I'm going to talk about the universe. It turns out that scientists only understand about 5% of the universe. We call it normal matter or baryonic matter. The other 95% is composed of dark energy and dark matter, and it's not understood what they are. They both start with the term dark, but they're totally different. Dark matter is about 25% of the universe and is thought to be an undiscovered particle called weakly interacting massive particles or possibly primordial black holes from the birth of the universe. Now, in either case, they neither emit or absorb light, but they have gravity, and that's how dark matter is detected. And it's thought that the large-scale structure of the universe, the formation of galaxies, was attributed to dark matter. Now, dark energy is about 70% of the universe, and it's thought that when the universe, through expansion, reached a critical volume, that dark energy emerged as a property of space itself and is causing the acceleration of the expansion of the universe. And this could lead to two possible things. The universe could continue its acceleration of expansion and basically rip itself apart down to the atomic level. It's called the Big Rip. The other possibility is that the acceleration from dark energy may decrease and the universe might actually start contracting, called the Big Crunch, which could lead to another singularity and another Big Bang. This is Steve Kosas with the Marie Drake Planetarium. Our public shows are on our website at mariedrakeplanetarium.org. Thank you.
Hanson Gress. Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta kanakaya ha ani kak. Gunnish cheese.
You are listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Southeast Alaska Land Trust is partnering with our previous guest, Litter Free, and in hosting this cleanup at two important sites having to do with conservation. And I am joined now by two of the Land Trust besties. Bailey Williams and Dan Heisel to share more with us about these specific areas and why this community cleanup is so important. But Gunath Chish, Wasa Iyati, Bailey, how are you? Nice to see you again.
Doing so well. Good to see you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dan, how are you? Wasa Iyati, it's been a couple years, but it's glad to have you back in the studio.
Thank you, Gunath Chish. Good to be back.
Yeah, and Bailey, you were here in the fall talking about your book.
I did. I was.
Which was awesome. I hope that's going well for you. You can go back and listen to that episode. I think you were on in like October, maybe something around there. Anyway, it was around there. But just search Bailey Williams, and you can find out all about her awesome, awesome book. But today we're talking about conservation. But first, Dan, you're the executive director.
No, I'm our stewardship specialist.
Stewardship specialist. Okay. But can you tell us about what the Southeast Alaska Land Trust is overall?
Absolutely. We are a nonprofit organization based here in Juneau, and our mission is to preserve important habitat, recreation, open space, and cultural and historical areas for the public use or the public to enjoy and use throughout Southeast Alaska.
Nice.
So we currently have 43 conservation sites across Southeast, and we are working with willing landowners all the time to preserve more. We stewardship them in perpetuity.
Because I remember when I've had SEALT, as people say, right? Do you call it that, SEALT?
We're SEALT. We used to go by Seal Trust. We still do. People thought we worked with seals, so there was some confusion. So
you changed it up a little bit.
Yeah, I still like Seal Trust rolls off the tongue well. So SEALT, Seal Trust, we just don't
Southeast
work with seals.
Alaska
directly.
Land Trust.
We do protect waterways.
But just as a side note, if people are out there and they have some land or are thinking about doing something in perpetuity, they could reach out to the Land Trust and find out how that works, right?
Absolutely.
And what's the best way to do that? Is there someone specific they're supposed to contact?
The absolute best way is to drop in and say hi, because we're a very small organization. We love to put faces to names and have that kind of social interaction. So we're downtown Juneau. But our office, 907-586-3100, any one of us is happy to chat.
Okay, cool. That's a good thing to know, just because I know people think about that all the time. And you can also see all of the lands that that the SEALT stewards on the website, which you can see all the different areas and all the different places that happen. But we're talking about two specific places today, Bailey. So let's talk about what are these two places and why are they important?
Yeah, absolutely. So we were listening to the Litter Free, our friends at Litter Free, who were speaking just before us, and they mentioned that this cleanup is for public lands. Mm-hmm. And it made us smile, because that's something that we really accentuate in our conservation work, that many of our conservation sites are public access. They are protected for us all, for mm-hmm. people to go and be able to enjoy and have these places of respite and places where you can hear birdsong and see wildlife and mm-hmm. just... Whew. So the two sites that we're facilitating cleanup on Saturday, they're very different and very unique. One, the Sunny Point conservation sites are on the wetlands, and the Vanderbilt Creek conservation site in Lemon Creek, it preserves one of the last intact wet watersheds in the valley there. And it's an interesting spot. We sometimes joke of it as being our problem child, or our child that needs the most love, because of its proximity to development in Lemon Creek. Mm. It's a valuable habitat for what it is. It's also a buffer zone for a salmonid stream. And one of the things that we talk about or think about a lot in conservation is interconnectivity. And that stream connects with the greater Mendenhall wetlands, the greater complex there. So in many ways, it's an effort to really embody in the real world what it looks like to protect an area that is not existing in an ideal ecological landscape. How do you still see the aliveness and vitality of an area that has been encroached by cement and pollutants on most sides and yet retains a certain vitality? Mm. And so cleanup there is particularly potent because of its proximity to the landfill. There's tons of wildlife-borne litter and trash, which, of course, those microplastics animals can ingest, and it's incredibly harmful for wildlife and for the environment, and it's just ugly as sin, so there's that. And then I'm happy to talk more about the Sunny Point properties, but did you want to pitch in? Dan is our stewardship fellow, so he's the one who spends the most amount of time looking at these properties.
No, I think you nailed it. They're both special spots. I'd say Vanderbilt Creek, you mentioned the buffer zone, and then it's also got these beautiful open wetlands a past staff member introduced me to that area at Sealt and said if you took someone and dropped them in the middle of the Vanderbilt Creek parcel, it's actually, there's two parcels that this property consists of, and either one of them, dropped them, kind of turned them around, you know, take off their blindfold, where are they? They wouldn't know that they were in the middle of a pretty, you know, developed kind of industrial part of town where there's a lot of businesses and whatnot. It's really beautiful, open habitat there. So
yeah. And tell us a little bit about Sunny Point, Dan.
Yeah. So Sunny Point is a different kind of wetland. So Vanderbilt is kind of this like uplift meadow. Sunny Point is more intertidal. It's got high marsh and low marsh habitats. Out there, we see a lot of migratory birds. We see a lot of fish. And then those in turn, of course, you know, there are bear and deer and other larger mammals that go out there that rely on them as well. Pretty hard to tell whether you're on land trust property or refuge out there because it's all pretty similar. And so the Sunny Point parcels Sealt work to conserve and protect and kind of establish an upland boundary to protect the refuge from further development. And so we manage it consistently with the state game refuge.
So how does this relate to Saturday's community cleanup? If it's just in terms of like for me as a layperson, I'm like, well, how does trash and debris get out to Sunny Point? How is that happening?
Totally. Sunny Point has a lot of tidal litter that washes in. There's kind of certain points that we tend to see it. For those familiar with Hansinger Pond out there, which you can see from Egan, the southwestern side. I'm going to realize I was wrong on that later. Basically, the side kind of facing towards town. Uh-huh. For whatever reason, the mechanics of the tide coming, you know, every year there's just kind of a buildup of tidally born litter there. Mm. We also get, you know, litter along Egan, which, of course, we're being very cautious. We don't want anybody going on Egan or anywhere near the right of way. But if you walk along the slope of the wetlands there, trash, you know, accumulates on the side of roads and then works its way down into the wetlands. So it's another hot spot. Those are the biggest ones we see. And every now and then there's some, you know, a bear or something deposits a little bit of trash out there, too.
Yeah. And Bailey, you mentioned this a little bit in talking about Vanderbilt, but what's the importance of the community cleanup to the conservation effort?
Oh, absolutely. In and of itself, once Sealt has taken on a conservation site, we are committed to protecting it in perpetuity. What that means is constant stewardship, like trying to keep that actual land intact as habitat and for its ecological value. It's not a very robust habitat if it has litter. Hmm. Or it's compromised in its ability to be a good habitat because you have animals who are going to pick up that colorful, shiny bit of whatever and choke on it or strangle themselves. Or like there's some very gnarly imagery and research if anyone's really interested in looking at this. But marine life gets horribly tangled in trash and litter, and its steady accumulation over time as it's ingested, it gets impacted, and critters eating other critters that have plastic in them is just a very well-known and very complex issue. So anytime it can be overwhelming to think of it on the global scale, which is one thing that's so wonderful about local conservation, is anyone who's coming out this weekend can help mitigate that right here where we live.
Yeah.
And there's something really powerful in that kind of reverence for our fellow wild critters, that at least this small space can be a refuge for them.
And people can specifically work towards working at the Vanderbilt or Sunny Point areas with you guiding them or helping them on Saturday? Because I know our last guest was talking about all the different locations, and basically you can pick up litter on any public land. But you all will be at these two locations and can A, answer questions, but also B, point people to the right areas of those, you know, where the stuff needs really to be picked up, I'm assuming.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll have some staff and board members, and we have some really committed volunteer land stewards who are members of the community who are kind of regular volunteers with us. And so really combinations of us at each site. And at Sunny Point, we'll have a table set up, so we'll be able to kind of point people in directions. And at Vanderbilt, we'll be out in the wetlands together. We'll be, if anybody comes late to Vanderbilt, we will be visible with fluorescent vests from the road. And it's also fun to get to chat and, you know, have some time together while out there.
We generally have many naturalists in our midst, so you generally get very cool people being able to identify birds and plants. And all
yeah, no, I was thinking of the Audubon Society. I know they participate a little bit in this as well, and, and definitely have some people out there who help out. So, I mean, they were saying in the last interview, over 800 people show up for this thing to help out. And it just, what a wonderful thing for Juno to do on a Saturday afternoon.
Absolutely.
Hopefully the weather's good. Wear your boots, I guess, if you're going to these areas, right? Wear some gear.
Extra tough for sure.
And yeah.
If you don't horribly just mind me mentioning something that I just find really important about this work, Juno has developed about 40% of its wetlands. And wetlands are just a wildly important habitat. And globally, we've lost 35% of wetlands in the last 50 years. So Juno's actually ahead where we've been more destructive. So what we have left is precious and valuable. And it's just a spirit of reciprocity and gratitude to go out and clean it up a little bit.
Yay, Juno.
We can do better.
We can do better, but yay for us. Well, thank you so much, Bailey Williams, Dan Heisel from Southeast Alaska Land Trust. For more, you can find out at southeastalaskalandtrust.org about the organization. For the event on Saturday, reminder to go to litterfree.org. Gunath Cheesh for coming in today. I really appreciate it.
Gunath Cheesh.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Up next, we're going to talk with Dr. Aparna Palmer from University of Alaska Southeast. But first, we're going to shout out another song. This is Kennedy Joe, who had performed on the red carpet stage sometime last year during Folk Fest, I believe. This is her song, Pretenders, on Juno Afternoon from KTOO.
Baby, I cry at the trouble you're had, but don't you overthink it. I don't think I love you like that. My body craves attention. Can hear it calling if you listen. Should probably ease up on the drinking, but it's my only ammunition. The world feels cold. Big man is burning it away, and everybody's burning bridges. It's not a place I'd like to stay. I think I need to learn to spend some real time alone. I give it up too early. I'm too young to feel this old. So darling, would you help me drown out all my demons? I won't practice your religion, but give me something to believe in. Can I relight the fire? All my bones have turned to embers. Could you be my reminder? 'Cause I'm surrounded by pretenders.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com. You're listening to Community Sport at Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. I'm joined in studio now by Dr. Aparna Palmer, University of Alaska Southeast Chancellor, for our monthly check-in on all things UAS. Gunath Cheesh for being here. Wasiyati, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm still coming down from Folk Fest. I still have the high of Folk Fest. And I know there was a Folk Fest out at UAS. I had the student activities director on to talk about the students put on their own Folk Fest, which was kind of cool a couple weeks ago.
Well, absolutely. We like to join in.
Yeah, for sure. So I know that spring is here. We're getting to be, what is it now, mid-April, which means graduation can't be that far away.
It's not far away. So graduation for us occurs in early May.
Wow, okay.
You know, we have three campuses in Southeast Alaska, and actually each campus has its own graduation.
Oh.
So in Sitka, graduation or commencement will be on Friday, May 2nd. In Ketchikan, May 3rd. And in Juneau, May 4th. Our graduation in Juneau will be at the Rec Center. On the same day, we will also have the Alaska Native Graduation Celebration, which will occur in the morning prior to the Juneau commencement ceremony.
And where did those take place here in Juneau, both of those ceremonies?
So the main ceremony occurs this year in the Rec Center, which is on our campus near the Lakeside campus. And then the Alaska Native Graduation Celebration will be in the Egan Library, again, on the Lakeside part of our campus.
And just so you know, just a little geeky note, May the 4th be with you. That's Star Wars Day.
Well, and it's the perfect day to wish our graduates the same wish.
Absolutely. Yeah. May the force be with you as you enter into, I wonder if people will incorporate that into their speeches.
Well,
that
now
would be
they
hilarious.
Will. Now that you've mentioned it, I'm going to put it into my ceremony.
Because it's true. I mean, it's one of those things where, I mean, to graduate, you know, now, you know, and it's always an apprehensive moment, right? It's a little nerve-wracking to graduate because you're thinking, am I going to get a job? Do I continue on to grad school? What do I do next with my life? Because you've been in many people who, if they've gone the traditional track and gone right after high school, you've been in school for years and years and years. I know at UAS you also have many returning students and adult students who come back and get a degree. So, But that's just kind of a fun thing. So graduation coming up for UAS.
Yes, we are very proud. This year we will be awarding 492 credentials. And so that's 65 associate's degrees, 108 bachelor's degrees, 33 certificates, 114 graduate degrees or credentials, and also occupational endorsements. We will be awarding 172 occupational endorsements to students who have earned them. So we're really proud.
What's an occupational endorsement?
So it is, you can think of it as a mini credential. So within about a semester, you can gain enough coursework to have a credential in something. So for example, when we think about the Sitka campus, they specialize in mariculture training. You can go there, get an occupational endorsement in mariculture within one semester, 13 credits, intensive coursework. At the end of that, you can be employed in the mariculture industry. And in fact, over 90% of those students actually are employed even before they graduate.
Wow, that's kind of cool because I think a lot of times people think of going to college as you have to spend years doing something, but there's other options at UAS.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're developing some micro-credentials, which are very similar to these occupational endorsements because they can be completed in a very short period of time. Mm. They are highly specialized, and so they can help you if you're in an existing position learn more skills so that you are able to advance in your profession.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Plus, we design them so that they kind of fit into one another like a ladder. And so as you build your occupational endorsements, you're working towards a certificate. And as you work towards your certificate, you're working towards an associate's degree and then a bachelor's degree if you want that.
Right.
It all fits into a nice pathway.
Yeah, that's really cool. Other things about graduation, or is that covered? I know it's May 2nd, 3rd, and 4th in the various different communities that have graduation. And I'm sure it's all listed on the uas.edu website in terms of, or people who are graduating know to invite their parents and such. Are they streamed as well? Do they put them online?
We will be live streaming the graduation ceremony. So for those of you who are unable to come to the Juneau ceremony, it will be live streamed.
That's nice. That's a really good thing for people.
And during this year's ceremony, we will be honoring a Juneau resident. So we will be honoring Sue Douglas for all of the work that she has done in our community and really all over Southeast Alaska. You know, her work, which she is really passionate about, has impacted the lives of elders, at-risk youth, people who are homeless, people who are low income. She is very, very passionate about making sure that people who are vulnerable really have a safe place to be.
That's excellent. Yeah, Sue is a wonderful person. Full disclosure, she was part of the KTO Legacy Foundation here at KTOO and really helping to continue you know, the history and the longevity of KTOO. So big shout out to Sue. Congratulations, Sue Douglas.
Yeah, she is amazing. And we're really excited to recognize her with our Meritorious Service Award.
That's excellent. Okay, what else is happening out there? I know there's other stuff going on.
Well, I want to tell you about Earth Day. So Earth Day is coming up, and our UAS Sustainability Committee is really excited about it. And we have four events that are open to the public.
Oh, excellent.
So we have an Earth Day Forest Therapy Walk, which will start at 1 p.m. at the Auk Rec Raven Shelter. We'll have an Eco Poetry Reading, which will be in the evening on the 22nd from 7 to 8:30 p.m. It'll be in the Glacier View Room on the Juno campus. We also have a speaker that is coming in who's going to talk about sonic ecosystems, really understanding ecosystems by listening to them.
Oh.
And so she'll be giving a talk on Friday, April 25th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. in the Glacier View Room on the Juno campus. That will actually be available by Zoom as well. And then finally, she'll actually do a sound walk. So you can walk with her on a sound walk to explore the world. And that's on Saturday, April 26th at 2:30 p.m.
That's amazing. And where is that schedule online somewhere? I'm sure there's
So if you go to our website and scroll down, just look at our activities calendar. They're listed there.
Okay, excellent. I love the idea of going on a sound walk.
I do too. And that one, the sound walk, you actually have to register for.
Okay.
No experience necessary.
Okay.
Just bring your ears.
Just listening to the world around you and
yep.
checking that out. Part of Earth Day activities, a bunch of them going on there. That's really cool.
Yep, absolutely.
Awesome. Okay, is there other stuff?
I think those are the things
those
that
are the
I wanted
big ones?
To highlight.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. So I have one question.
Yes.
You know we have to talk about the tardigrades or the polychaetes, but this time I was reading an article from February.
Okay.
And I think we talked about this one other time, but so just for those who don't know, Dr. Palmer is a marine biologist and is into tardigrades, which are known as water bears, or polychaetes, which are sea worms.
Correct.
And the water bears are, in February, there was this article about how they are finding out that the something about the radiation, it can help people who are taking cancer treatments to have less effects from the radiation, and the tardigrades are involved in some way in that?
Yeah, so tardigrades are really interesting. Last time we talked about how tardigrades have the ability to go into this dormancy called cryptobiosis.
Okay.
And they go into dormancy because of harsh environmental conditions. They are aquatic creatures, so as their habitat dries out, they go into dormancy, but they can actually go into dormancy for a wide variety of reasons. And it's part of their survival mechanism. What's interesting about tardigrades is that when they are in their dormant form, which is called a TUN, T-U-N, they are resistant to the effects of radiation. And so scientists have always wanted to know, like, why are they resistant to the effects of radiation? Specifically, why isn't their DNA destroyed when you bombard them with high levels of radiation, gamma radiation, X-ray radiation? And so what they're discovering is that tardigrades use a class of proteins that bind with the DNA in their cells to protect them from radiation. And so they're using this knowledge to kind of inspire them to develop ways in which we can protect human beings that go through radiation as part of their cancer therapy.
That's amazing. I love that. From a little tiny, I don't know how, they're pretty microscopic, right?
So,
these water bears?
Most of them are less than 1 millimeter in length. On average, they're half a millimeter in length. So if you take a pencil, a very nice sharp pencil, and make a dot on your paper with that pencil, that's about how big the average tardigrade is.
And they're like, no radiation. Don't give me the radiation. That's so funny. I love that.
They are amazing. They can withstand pressures that only occur at the bottom of the ocean. They can withstand zero gravity. So lots of different, very, very harsh environmental conditions they can withstand as long as they're in their ton form.
Chancellor Dr. Aparna Palmer, thank you so much. Gunnath Cheese, find out about graduation, Earth Day activities, and more at uas.edu. Gunnath Cheese for being here.
Gunnath Cheese, and thank you so much.
That's going to do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, we learn about an upcoming protective health seminar open to the public. It's a class from Bartlett Regional Hospital. And we meet and learn from two student clubs, the Ocean Guardians and JDHS Yadakathle Ignite Club. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Good cheese!
You're listening to KTOO 104.3 Juno and KAUK 91.7 Juno, Auk Bay.